Welcome everybody to another episode of Learn Biz. Today we're going to cover a survey we came across that was just highlighting financial vulnerabilities of small businesses and had some fascinating data in it.
So I actually first came across this survey because I was doing a training on finance and I needed some content for that training. And I ended up finding some really shocking statistics that made for great training material. And so, we kind of dug in a little bit deeper to to look at some of these that we're gonna be talking about.
So, just to kind of start it, there was two pieces of the survey that they did.
Okay, hang on. So the survey itself is a little bit lengthy. We're gonna put in the description if you want to check out the survey. We'll put the link in the description. I think with that we can now jump into.
Yeah, thank you. I like to get to the data.
We got
to
be proper here. this is appropriate.
Oh, goodness. Oh. So when they did the survey, I found it fascinating because they did the online survey first, and then they tweaked the survey from results they got from the online survey, and then they did a pretty extensive phone survey from that. And what was interesting about it is that as they tweaked it, the results changed a little bit. And I always found that fascinating, especially it was really dominant in the demographics when they just looked solely at demographics, which is male, female. For instance, on the online versus the phone, more males did the online, more females did the phone survey. And I don't know if that goes back to that old adage that guys have 2,000 words to use during a day and women generally use 6,000 words a day. And so we're like, I'll just do it online because I don't want to talk anymore.
Yeah.
So I don't know if some of that came into play, and they didn't really come out and say, but it was pretty interesting that the demographics between the two were slightly different, and I found that super interesting. But at the same time, I liked it because it painted a slightly different picture overall about small businesses and their financial vulnerabilities as they get into it. I don't want to spend a lot of time on the demographics, but I do think it's interesting to point out as you go through that and you see the differences. If you look at it, it was kind of interesting to see the differences between people who did it online and what they were saying and those that actually had a phone call and answered the questions and what they did. And I better put out there that as well, it was done nationwide. So this wasn't isolated to a single state because they did show a few comments in there where some states, the small business owners, the demographics were skewed, like Florida, Arizona were skewed a lot more Hispanic and Latino type businesses.
Sure.
Versus you get into the North, Minnesota, and they were just dominantly white Caucasian type business owners.
But I think it's really important to point out, and maybe we're just teasing to until we get to the meat of some of this, but it's important to point out that the thing that I like about this survey is the fact that it's real businesses. So many people, when you get to entrepreneurship, they have this stereotype in their mind. And I always go back to, if you think that Shark Tank is how entrepreneurship works, you probably also think that The Bachelor is how dating works. Like reality TV is not. And honestly, so I have worked with some businesses that have been on Shark Tank. So I'm not trying to discredit that and say that it's a bunch of bunk. I'm just trying to say that that represents probably less than 1% of small businesses and really what most entrepreneurs are dealing with. And then there's the other 99%+ that fall into these characteristics.
Right. And I like that they focused on financials because you've made an argument for years that I've completely been sold to, and that is that everything ties back to numbers, right? So if everything ties back to a number, then financials have to be in a very intimate part of your business and your day-to-day operations as you do it.
Well, and the way I like to look at the financials is, to me, the financials are the ABCs, And what do I do with the ABCs? I make words. And what do I do with words? I make sentences. Sentences make paragraphs. Paragraphs make stories.
Right.
And so when I read a book and I engage in the story, I'm not really getting hung up on the exact letters that are making that story. But without the letters, no story exists. And in your business, without the numbers, no story exists.
Yeah. Great analogy.
So that's how I look at it.
I like that. So the first stat that kind of stood out to me that I found interesting was that 51% of the respondents use a business checking, right? And then the numbers got lower, 23 for an actual business savings account. And then it was a smaller number, 22 or 23% that have a business credit card. Mm-hmm. But just that first number, 51% of the people are using a business checking. I was like, oh no, that's a red flag, you know? Because if you're...
Half the people aren't.
Yeah, which means they're using a personal checking account, personal savings, personal credit cards to run their business. And if you're a cottage industry, okay, I kind of get it.
I'm going to argue with it. I'll let you finish and I'll give you my argument afterward.
And I'll probably support it, but I kind of get it because you're more a little bit more home-based doing things. It might be smaller, but I still make the argument that you don't get the separation between the business and the personal assets. So, you know, if you're going to be running as a sole proprietorship, great, I get it. But really you should be getting those separations of business and personal out of the way.
So, okay, here's my argument as to why 100% should have a business checking account. It costs nothing.
Yeah, true.
So whether you have another account number on your personal account, you can go to the same institution. If you've got a credit union that you really like, every single credit union, they'll let you set up a separate one. What do you need? An EIN.
Right, that's right.
What does an EIN cost?
It's nothing.
Nothing. So even in your example of cottage industry, where now technically, so business licensing regulation is going to vary from state to state.
And county to county and city to city.
Yeah, and then also your registration is going to vary. And so so there are different things that you are supposed to do legally. But I've consulted a lot of businesses that are like, I don't want to go to all the setup because I don't even know if I'm going to do this past this little arts festival. I'm like, okay, you can run a legal for this arts festival to test the waters and just count it as, you know, you're doing market testing right now. That's fine. But even then, I still would separate it because it's so easy. You show up to your bank, your credit union, and you just say, I need to open up an account. And then to get a credit card on that, boom, done.
That's right.
Now, what does this get you? It gets you records.
That's right.
So when it comes time for taxes, guess what? Everything's in one place. So if you did a crappy job of keeping receipts, well, you have third-party records that are super valid because they're coming from a bank or a credit union. It just it keeps it clean. It's so much easier. 100% to me. Like, there's no reason.
Anyways, that was just fascinating to me that the number was that low. I expected maybe 70 or 80, but if, you know, only half, 51%, I was like, okay, yeah, that's a huge thing. So if you're out there and you don't have business accounts, you've got to make that change.
So, okay, I want to talk about this for a second. Why? Why would that number be so low when it's so easy to do? I don't think it's as much ignorance as people want to pretend. Like, they just don't know any better. I do think that that accounts for a decent percentage. And I don't think it's laziness either.
No. So they used some terminology frequently through there where they called micro businesses, right? And micro business to me is a single owner, family owned, cottage industry. So I wonder if, now, not all of them were in that category because they had it, but there was a section of them that were micro businesses. Mm-hmm. And I suspect that you have a number of micro businesses that are just running as a sole proprietor and or maybe not even running fully legal.
And that's kind of what I was going to get to, is people underestimate the fact that they're doing a business. They get distracted. They're really good at running their business in terms of the business itself, but they're really bad at running the business in terms of finances, management, legal, those kinds of things. And so, yeah, I think it's just a distraction.
Well, and it have to be because, you know, one of my thought was, well, maybe they're younger, not sure, but the average age, when you go to the demographics, the average age of the respondents was from 48 to 52. It was, you know, a mature workforce or ownership is a better word that yeah. was surveyed.
That in and of itself tells a lot.
Yeah.
You know, the average age of business being that high.
Yeah. Now the number of years the business was in business, did range from 4 to like 17 years.
Yeah.
So I wonder if some of those front, well, I don't know. One of the numbers that you get to, that we'll discuss and maybe I'll hold off, but they also talked about, the younger the business, they had tendencies to where they were at extreme high risk.
Let's pull up a couple of those stats. I mean, we'll transition down. So you've got here in the notes, in general, younger businesses tend to use fewer and less sophisticated financial products and services for business purposes than older businesses.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, is that kind of what you were going with?
Or? Yes. Yeah. So the more mature the business was, as they grew, they understood that they needed something more substantial to help run their business. So QuickBooks, I'm assuming.
Oh, that's the younger the business, not the younger the business owner.
Yes. The younger the business.
Okay.
Yeah. So they didn't, most of the numbers I tried to get away. Well, there were a few that tied it to the age, but most of it was the number of years the business had been, in business. That sounds so cliche.
But okay, there's a I don't want to say contradictory thing, but this is what got me on to this study in the first place. And I don't know if you have it in your notes, but it stated that you are twice as likely to have cash flow concerns if you're using either a paid accounting service and or accounting software.
Yes.
Versus just using an Excel spreadsheet, which right. is interesting because here you're stating that the younger businesses are using less sophisticated, but that's stating, you know, the cash flow concerns. And that was something that was fascinating to me because it illustrated the issue of how close are you to the actual management of the business. So it's not that, hiring an accounting firm or using a software is bad.
Right.
It's removing yourself from that process starts to cause problems because you're separated.
Well, but that leads into one of the other stats that they had on there, and that was like 50%, 55% of the respondents had less than a month worth of reserve to cover business expenses. Which I was just like, whoa, that blows me away because it's common practice in any business format that you have 3 and preferably 6 months of reserve to cover expenses. But half of them, at least half of them, had a month to 2 months of reserve. Mm-hmm. And I think
I love the stat where 15% of these business owners could not cover an unexpected $1,000 business-related emergency.
Yeah.
$1,000?
Right.
Like, what in the world? How? Yeah. That's not even an emergency. That's bad day.
But there was a percentage, so of the 55%, so you got a percentage of the 55%, what was it, 30%? Had no savings at all. So you know that other 15% is falling into there because they have zero savings, and hence that's why they can't survive anything. And that's crazy because the economy nowadays changes so fast that without reserve, I don't know how you stay in business.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Now that's crazy. But here's the crazy thing to just add to that. Back when I was doing full-time business consulting, and so, you know, my door was open and I had just constant businesses coming in, I started noticing this trend. Now, this is a little bit anecdotal, but I'll tell you, when people wanted to start a business was when they had a traumatic thing happen in their life. And two of the big ones that anytime they would come in with either of these, I'd be like, stop. This is not a good time. One was going through a divorce and the other was losing their job.
Yeah.
And I'm like, these are both terrible moments for you to start a business. But people did it all the time. They would come in and they're just like, I need to start a business. And I'm like, okay, you know, what are you thinking? They said, well, I've wanted to do this for years, but now that I'm getting a divorce, I figure I'll have all this time on my hand. I'm like, okay, give it 2 years, let the dust settle, figure out what the custody arrangements are going to be. That's
alimony and everything else and what you're going to even be left with.
Yeah. And then time. You know, okay, you think you got all this time on your hands. Well, guess what? I've seen divorced parents that are like, it's not any easier because I got to drop the kids off and then I got to pick the kids up. And then when I've got them, I've only got them myself.
So I want as much time to be with just them.
And I'm not saying that's always the case, but I'm saying figure that out before you go launching the business, because that's what's going to put you in this category of, okay, you know, you're going to end up being this person that has zero reserve if something bad happens in your business.
Yeah. I can't get this to scroll. So are you okay to cut for a second? Because otherwise I got to reach Clark. Oh,
I have to cut for a second because you already... Yeah, come on in. We are recording.
Oh. Now you got to come in and be on the camera.
Please wait and stop like bouncing or banging whatever you were doing. Good. I'm glad we got that on camera. You're on audio at least. Thanks.
Famous.
Oh, you had good timing.
Couldn't have been any better.
Oh.
Do you want to clap or anything to help? You're just good. You'll watch and cut.
If I use it, I use it. If I don't, I don't.
Anyway, the last stat that I saw that I'd like to go over is that tied to loans.
Okay.
Right? And it was that... there was a number of them that were rejected for loans. And I think this is important because whenever we work with startups, people forget this. And I don't know why they don't make these connections. So I just thought this is a good thing to cover for anybody. If they're looking for loans, get these in order before you go to the bank, because otherwise you're going to run through, well, they all hate me and I can't believe this one. And No. There's just certain things they expect. So of the people who were denied loans that did need financing. And by the way, before I go into that one, let me say that I found it interesting that in the survey, 71% of the people said they were going to try not to use any financial services to help grow their business in the next year. And I'm only assuming because of the volatility of the economy and still trying to get back up and interest rates still being high. I mean, I sat in a meeting the other day that a commercial loan was floating at like 9 to 10%. That was starting.
Yeah.
Which was crazy. Well, I shouldn't say crazy, but unheard of in my lifetime.
Getting back more to where it historically has been.
Yeah. But
we've been decades where it's like, you know, who cares? It's free money.
That's right.
You know.
So
I think with that 71% not wanting to, I do believe that there is this big transition. When you're talking about businesses, a lot of businesses are what I'll call subsidized businesses.
Yes.
Like, so I'm working out of my home. I'm not putting a rent expense on my business financials. So I I think with that 71%, I don't think it's just that they are not getting loans. I think there's this leap of faith that you have to take. You know, I look at these businesses right. that are working from home, and when they're working from home, they aren't paying a rent expense. But then all of a sudden, I have to go out and lease a, you know, a commercial space. Mm-hmm. And now I have $2,000 a month that I'm paying for this commercial space that I'm leasing, that before I was able to do it in my garage or my basement.
Right, right.
And so a lot of times businesses are comfortable in the space that they're in. And if they get a loan, you kind of have to grow up. You kind of have to be a little bit more serious with what you're doing. And I don't have a percentage to, you know, to back that up, but I do know that a lot of businesses that I worked with, you know, I'll classify them as lifestyle businesses, that they were happy with where they were. They're like, no, things are good. I don't want to take it too serious. You know, so that happens a lot. So the 71% number doesn't shock me. Like, that's not a big number in my mind with the experience I had.
And then going back to where we started in your last comment that, you know, as they decide to, hey, look, I need to grow my business, and then they go to a bank, and then they're denied. So the numbers were kind of interesting. So of those that actually were denied a loan, 25% of those was insufficient credit history, right? They weren't using enough credit cards. They didn't have business accounts. They weren't doing things like that.
Insufficient business credit?
Yes. No, credit. I'm assuming credit history, because most small businesses, they're on
personal credit.
That's right. They're going to look at both if you have them, but you have to show strong business credit before you can
really
say.
Really strong business
before
credit.
Before they forget about your personal. Otherwise, as you know, most small business loans have a tie to you personally. And so that's what's, they're going to look at that personal credit.
Yeah, yeah.
And you're going to put a personal guarantee on it anyway. So they're going to go back and look at that.
Which kind of goes back to my example of, you know, when people lose their job and go through a divorce and want to start a business and they have, you know, their credit shot because they're right. going through a divorce and they're like, I need a loan.
Yeah.
Oh, not the time to do it.
The next one was, not surprisingly, low credit score.
Okay.
You know, you're not surprised by that one. And then you get into lack of collateral, which we see all the time. You don't have enough cash in the bank to meet the down payment.
Now, okay, I want to talk about this for just a second, because the typical, stereotypical, and I kind of want to emphasize that word because I am putting people in boxes here for a second. The stereotypical entrepreneur does not fit the classical societal mold. They're the person Correct. Who doesn't want to go get a job and work for someone else. They want to do their own thing. That's one of the reasons why they're an entrepreneur. And so if you don't fit the societal mold, then a lot of times you have bad credit, which is kind of this interesting catch-22 situation. Well,
keep talking.
Okay. Where you have these entrepreneurs that just because they don't fit society's example of good business sense doesn't mean that they don't have good business sense. Society, it's kind of like public education. A lot of people argue against public education and say, oh, public education is horrible. And I'm like, no, public education is amazing for everyone in the middle. The farther Right. you get to the outliers, whether you're an amazing student or whether you're a terrible student, the farther you get to the outliers, the harder it is for public education to support that child. The closer you Yes. are to the median, then the easier it is for public education to support that child. Well, it's the same thing with public financial institutions. The more you fit the median, the easier it is for you to get loans. Well, right. a lot of entrepreneurs, they're either really good to the point that they're like, well, I've never actually, you know, gotten a job and built up credit. I've always just done my own thing. Or they're really bad. Hey, I can't figure life out, and so I'm going to call myself a serial entrepreneur and not ever pin down to anything serious in my life.
Well, and
is that just offensive there?
No. No, but adding to your point, another one that we commonly see when you get a business that's 3 to 5 years old, been kind of bootstrapping it, but now there's clear momentum. They want to get some financing to help grow. This is so common. It's sickening. And we preach against it and preach against it and preach against it that no one ever listens. And we still preach. And I don't know why we preach, because no one listens. But for the last,
that's the definition of preaching.
So we're preaching. But you see those companies that in the beginning, for the first couple of years, all they're doing is listening to their accountant. Write everything off, write everything off, write everything off, write everything.
Yeah,
right?
Show a loss, show a loss, show a loss.
Right? Even though they made money, okay, and they could have shown profit, they wrote everything off. And now you take your income statements into the bank and they're all zeros or negatives. And a bank just goes, I want to, and I think there's potential for your business, but I can't lend against negative numbers.
Yeah, yeah.
And I just saw it again the other day, and I just beat my head against the wall. And it's crazy, because then you show negatives, and then they show financial projections that show these beautiful numbers, and you're just like, you. I almost used some four-letter words, but because it's so bad and bad that now everyone just goes, you don't even got a freaking clue what you're talking about.
Oh, yeah. It's so disconnected.
Yes.
So disconnected.
And I'm just like, oh, you know, if you would have been a lot more conservative in your projections, maybe they would have started some negotiation or say, hey, look, clean up some stuff. But it gets so bad because they just want to show how great it's going to be, even though they have negative numbers. And now it's just, anyways, you know where I'm going with it. So if you fit one of those molds, reach out to Ryan at learnbiz.co.
No.
But there's good resources out there that can help you do that. But pay attention to that one. If you've been on your taxes putting negatives or zeros, and I get you can generally by IRS standards, I think it's 2 years, because if you show a third year, you really aren't in business, if you know what I mean. So
yeah, it's actually,
but it's so common.
Within a 5 year period, you can
do it. 3 years, anyways, it can't.
Yeah, I'd have to
check with your accountant. You can see we're not CPAs. Yeah,
to the point that you're making, and I want to bring something up. For me, I don't want to work with all entrepreneurs. There's a whole class of entrepreneur out there that I'm like, no, I don't want to work with you, because you have this mentality. If your mentality is, how do I avoid paying taxes? How do I not pay taxes? Because we all want to avoid. We want to mitigate, right, our tax liability, and that's fine. But anyone that's really, their business is based on not paying taxes, I'm like, you don't have a business. You have a tax shelter. I'm not interested in working with you. And same kind of thing with what we're talking about here is, if this isn't a business, if this is just a side hustle where you make a little bit of side cash, and you're not willing to separate out your business accounts, I'm really not wanting to work with you. Like, I want to work with people who, they want to make the world a better place. They want to solve problems, and they're using business as the tool to do that.
Yeah.
It's the same thing. I look for people that all they want is free money, and I'm like, if your business is so bad that you can only exist on free money, you can't actually earn profits, I'm not opposed to someone taking advantage of a grant program, but when that's your business plan, that's not a business plan. Like, you got to be able to earn something. You got to be able to produce something. So yeah. I'm just ranting here, but you triggered something deep down inside where I'm just like,
ooh. Yeah, and I'm like, I got nothing.
There were a few faces that popped. I mean, so I did a lot of business consulting over the years, and no, I didn't like every single person that I worked with. I actually had a police investigator that one of the people, luckily I only met with them either once or twice, but they had to review all of my notes because they were, I think they were laundering money through their small business.
Really?
Yeah.
I haven't heard. All right. Off the air, you're telling me this story. Cause I haven't heard this one. I thought I'd heard everything.
And it was cool because when the investigator showed up, the guy, he shows up in a hoodie. He's got this scraggly beard. He looked like some bum. And the first thing I say to him is, I'm like, are you legit? And he pulls out his badge. He's like, yeah, I'm legit right there. I'm like, you don't look legit. He said, I'm a private investigator. I'm supposed to blend in. I'm like, all right, whatever. And so then he wanted to, I had to dig up the note. I knew he was coming. He actually made an appointment with me. Yeah. And so I knew he was coming. So I dug up all the notes. I'm like, I don't think you're going to find much. Like I gave him solid business counsel. And so that's probably why they didn't want to come back, because they were looking for laundering. So there you go. That's the cliff notes of that story. If you stayed to the end, if you stayed with us through the whole show, you got to hear that fun little tidbit. Any other stats that you want to throw out?
No, I mean, those are the ones that stood out the most to me. Just, and those are, to me, I think the real easy ones to fix, that I think just you get in business, you start getting through the motions, and then you find yourself caught in that little bit of a spider web. And so because those are the easy ones to fix, you can, you know, any business owner can make those quick corrections to do it. And I think that's why I pulled out the ones I did. I don't know if there were any others that stood out to you in it.
No, I think you covered some great. It's a lengthy study for those of you who want to do the read. It's great information. It. Yeah, it's
if you're great in business, I suggest you do it, because it points out just a lot of what small business vulnerabilities that they're making on the financial side. And so it's really good to read through and say, hey, am I doing this one? Am I doing that? Because stuff that they brought out, I was just like, yep. Seen it, right?
Well, and I strongly believe that there are two ways that you can learn anything in this world. One is you can do it yourself. Two is you can learn from others.
Yeah.
Well, if it's something really stupid, it's awesome to learn that from others and not have to do it yourself. And so this study points out a lot of things. And it's not a pointing fingers study. It's very just, hey, these are the results the facts, that we got.
This is the data that we received.
But it's very, it opens your mind to the fact that, oh my gosh, there are a lot of people who aren't taking it seriously. They're cutting corners. They're being lazy. They're being distracted, whatever the case may be. And it's hurting them. It's hurting their business. It's causing financial stress that doesn't need to be there. And even if your business isn't in financial stress, what are you leaving on the table? What are you not getting? If your business is okay, it could be amazing if you could eliminate some of this financial stress.
Totally agree.
So,
well, thanks. You can find a link to the survey down in the notes. So, and then the description. So please scroll down, pull it out. It is worth the read. Otherwise, thank you for joining us here, Ryan Murray, Ethan Migliore on Learn Biz again. Thanks, everybody.
Take care.